Support for the Commodity Week podcast comes from Strategic Farm Marketing in Champaign with crop insurance, grain marketing, and commodity brokerage services. Learn more at sfarmmarketing.com. And by ADM. ADM thanks America's farmers because everything they do starts with you.
This is the April 1st edition of Commodity Week. Another USDA surprise today on Commodity Week.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Welcome to Commodity Week. I am Todd Gleason. Later in this half hour, we'll talk with John Bondurant of Bondurant Futures. He's in Memphis, Tennessee. Our panelists today in studio include Paul Cooley of ADM Investor Services out of Oakland, Illinois, Jackie Vakes of Stewart Peterson from Champaign, Illinois, and Dan Zwicker of ADM Grain Group. He's in Decatur, Illinois.
Support for Commodity Week comes from AgriGold Hybrids, featuring the AgriGold Giants, a group of five new hybrids designed to meet the performance standards of yield, health, and consistency required by Midwestern corn growers. More information is at AgriGoldGiants.com or at 800-262-7333. And by ADM. ADM thanks America's farmers because everything they do starts with you.
Well, let's open today's discussion with this question. Paul Cooley, we now have 5 months until a new corn crop comes out of the field in the United States. Which set of end users, if any, will stand aside the marketplace?
I think it'll be the export areas. And the reason is that a lot of these companies have hired from the major grain companies, executives to hedge their risk. Their money center banks have given them a line of credit. A lot of people are flat price long and ready for higher prices. And I don't think the exporter areas and importer countries are there yet. And I think that as a result of that, this is one of the magnificent playouts of this new era of modern hedging and trading.
Dan Zwicker?
The ones that haven't been aggressive over the past 3 or 4 months to accumulate a cash position, and if they don't have 90 days to 100 days already on the books, it's going to be awful hard for them to get enough cash corn to go to the finish line.
So you're just saying across the board, anybody who's not booked up?
Yeah, if they've been sleeping at the wheel and not being aggressive in accumulating a cash position, I think they're out of luck.
Jackie Vakes.
Well, I think I couldn't agree with Dan more because that was going to be my answer. Anybody who hasn't gotten a hold of cash, I think that's the absolute bottom line. You have to have the cash available.
This is another one for everybody. Do you think the end of the week move in the corn pit began the process of rationing supplies? And we'll go backwards this time. We'll start with you, Jackie.
No, I don't think so at all. I think when you look at the end of the week in the corn pit, all we looked at was some profit taking, and we really didn't gain that much. I mean, even though we've been up 75 cents in the last 2 days, we didn't finish the week up 75 cents. So, no, I don't think we rationed anything.
Dan?
We've started the process. I'm sure after the report, it's got a lot of people thinking and how far they're going to want to chase the market.
I don't think I think the commodity funds aren't going to go out and buy another 100 million bushels and just tag along and get long and get killed like they did in the previous deal. It was amazing to me the number of people out in Iowa and Illinois that said, oh, we didn't have the ethanol usage. Oh, we had a bigger crop supply. And some of those people really got a big head fake. So the big factor here on the bottom line here is that I don't know if it's cash ownership, it's futures positions. That's the golden egg, and that's how it's traded.
Here's the way the numbers settled up in Chicago from the CME Group. Corn this week had a high of $7.38 and a quarter, a low at $6.59 and a quarter. May futures settled at $7.36. Remember, they gained more than 70 cents in the last two trading sessions of the week, Thursday and Friday. But the weekly trade, just 46 and a half cents higher Friday to Friday. December futures at 637 and a half were up 28 cents. By the way, new contract high, right, I think, in December corn futures. And they had an outside up week. Given the weekly changes in the market, which weren't as big as the last 2 days, were you disappointed old crop corn contracts were unable to lock the limit up on trade Friday?
Well, I thought it was pretty interesting. I mean, we did lock limit up for a while. In fact, we had about 100,000 contracts sitting at the buy level you know, when we were locked limit up, and it went from 100,000 down to zero just like that. So what it said to me was we probably saw some active selling on the part of farmers, you know, and that's to be expected after you've had a move like this. I wasn't disappointed.
Dan, was it a good week technically for the marketplace, especially for the new crop corn?
That's the way I view it. I think it was friendly clear across the board on old or new. We finished out the month strong, and we started the new month off here in at least moving higher. And when we're trading 45-cent limits, I don't think anybody wanted to lock it, so we trade 70 cents Sunday night. I think everybody's a little afraid of that. No, I think it was a good close.
All right. Planting intentions report, prospective plantings released on Thursday of this week, along with the quarterly grain stocks report for corn. USDA now says that farmers they surveyed, and there were a whole bunch of surveys, say we're going to plant 92.178 million acres of corn. And when they looked at the quarterly grain stocks, this is for Q2, what's left in the bin, they say 6.523 billion bushels. That's actually below the 6.69 ending or stocks number that was what the trade was looking for, and total number of bushels, billion bushels, that they thought would be left. Was it a number? Is it a number that can supply enough corn for the end of the season, all the way to the time we have another crop coming in?
There's going to have to be some rationing with that number. And of all the numbers, when you look at it for corn and soybeans and wheat, that was the number. I mean, you could see that with the lock limit of old crop corn and then the other strong advance. So the stocks number was the key number out of the report. Everything else has kind of taken second seat to that for right now. And it basically says the market has some work to do in cutting demand anywhere from 300 to 400 million bushels here over the next 6 months.
Paul, you've got some three decades better, maybe, trading this marketplace, watching this marketplace. You were there for the 1970s. You were there for the mid-90s run in the marketplace. 6.523 billion bushels. We're using, what, 1.1 billion a month. If you start doing the numbers, it's a zero or less than zero by the time we get to the new corn crop, right?
Yeah, and, of course, we cut the stocks 170 million below trade estimates. And, of course, our guest estimate of the actual carryover is 575 million bushels, and that's unrealistic from any numbers that I've ever seen before since I've been trading, even in the great grain robbery years. I think the big factor here is that we're going to have to start doing a job in the basis. In other words, if it's really this tight, we're going to see the basis go over the futures. We're going to see an inverse carry in the marketplace. And I think it is the function of the marketplace is to price our exports basically out of the marketplace, because my opinion is from last week's conversation, you know, these new ethanol plants are financed better. The large hog and poultry people are hedged better. And I think it's going to be a tug of war to actually play chicken in the domestic market.
The person that's in trouble in this corn market is the so-called cash trader that trades paper, but he doesn't have the physical commodity. He's selling trains or he's selling trucks or he's selling barges, but he really doesn't have the cash commodity. He's the guy that's in trouble, and that is where you're going to see a lot of wide swings in basis levels.
A middleman somewhere along the lines or just?
Yeah, that's a middleman. Mm-hmm. He's trading paper, but he's trading cash paper, and he's short over here, he's long over here, but he doesn't necessarily have the cash commodity yet.
Isn't that an elevator along the river system?
No, not necessarily. Uh-uh.
Who would
the elevator has cash?
Who would be a representative?
Brokers that deal with end users.
Right, truckers. There's a lot of truckers that do that all the time. In fact, we have a lot of clients like that. You know, they're trading paper with the idea that they're going to be able to get the cash, and that isn't something that's necessarily realistic in the circumstance that we're in.
Well, let me ask you this question, because the weekly changes weren't all that big by comparison to what happened on Thursday and Friday. If it's the cash trader that's in the middle of it, does that make a difference to the marketplace and how high is for the corn market? Does it cap it in some way? I don't know that I understand it enough to really know, but I'm going to ask you the question anyway.
Well, this is a two-part question here, and the new crop corn is going to get – there's a lot of corn getting planted in the south. It's getting planted early, and, you know, there's a lot of field work going on right now in central Illinois, you know, in the future here. But what the problem here is, I think, you know, with the state of Illinois grain dealer's license and everything, I don't sense there's going to be any problem in the state of Illinois on cash trading. I think it's – they monitor that so close, and it's only the big guys that know how to, you know, that play that game, in my opinion. The third area that I think that the big question here is that the market, you know, there could be some spot shipments in here, but we're starting to see the ethanol people starting to lead the parade and some of the dry corn mills. Actually starting to push the cash prices. So, you know, obviously they realize that they have to buy grain for the right time frame, and we're starting to see that happen in the marketplace.
Well, I guess my question really is, if it's paper traded...
Not all of it's paper traded. You probably don't understand what I'm saying. But
right,
I mean, the end user that needs cash, it would be my opinion that he's got 60 days in here to try to get as much cash ownership as he can, because if he really doesn't have it by June 1 or so, I think it's going to be awful difficult to have available cash during the month of August unless we have an exceptionally early planting, early harvest, and we're able to move a lot of grain, the new crop, forward here, bring it into this mark here.
So you're talking about somebody who actually hedged their supply needs in cash or in paper but hasn't found a cash source for it yet.
Right. Mm-hmm. Right. And, I mean, that's really the function of the market. If they're large enough, they can buy futures and take delivery somewhere, but there's complications with that about, you know, how many bushels they have to take and where it's going to be delivered on the Illinois River. So it's certainly not the means and the choice that most people want, but it is definitely something that gives them an alternative. So it could really push futures up. I mean, that's what we saw happening in hard red winter wheat when we had tight supplies and they couldn't get it. They had to buy the futures to be able to take delivery on it. So that's something that's why we've been pushing, and I think everybody has, to have guys actually get the cash in hand so that they've got the grain.
So end users should work quickly to put cash in their hands at this point.
You're already seeing basis levels changing all over. I mean, the race was on after after the report Thursday morning.
Yep.
Well, then the secondary question is, you said it could really push futures. We saw that happen in the wheat market a few years ago. What's high in the corn market? And the second part of that is, because it's an end-user problem and potentially not a producer problem, they probably don't have a lot of grain left anyway, and they're making the sales, does the farmer need to do anything about it? Anybody?
Well, I think we're going to see some tremendous things happen. For example, in wheat corn spreading, I think we're going to see some ideas of probably some of the feed industry also look at substitution of DDGs and also wheat into the product. I think the big factor is that at some point in time, some of the other end users in foreign countries will probably find cheaper sources of grain, and we'll see them cancel export grain shipments, and the domestic market will function and function pretty good, in my opinion.
Dan, what about the second 3 months? You're talking about 60 to 90, so we're at April and May and maybe June. What happens July and August?
Well, I think that's what the function of the market is, the way I view it, between now and then, to get that cash inventory. If you can't get your hands on that cash inventory as an end user to meet your July and August needs, you're going to be in pretty big trouble.
Yeah.
Okay, some of the rest of the numbers that came out from Chicago this week. In the bean pit, the May futures had a high of $14.32. Their low was at $13.41. The settlement price, 35.5 cents higher at $13.93¾. November beans finished $13.89¼. They were up 39 cents for the week. The April lean live cattle at $122.12 for their top. The bottom at $117.60. Settled up $347.5 at $122.07. And the April feeder cattle at $138.10 were up $3.25 on the week. The lean hogs for the week finished at $94.22. They were up $1.75 for the week. The numbers from USDA showed 76.6 for acreage for corn or for soybeans, and their quarterly grain stocks number at 1.249 billion bushels. Very quickly, the acreage number means what?
On beans, what the acreage number means? Well, of course, we have tight stocks. I did go back and look, though. There's a 3.5% deviation on that report.
My observation is out of that 92.2 or whatever it is, about 2 million of it is in Minnesota and the Dakotas.
The bean carryover next year is going to be extremely tight.
We'll be back in 2 minutes when we talk with John Bondurant.
I'm Steve Hilberg with the Midwestern Regional Climate Center, located at the Illinois State Water Survey in Champaign. The month of March came to a relatively quiet end this week in Illinois. Temperatures this week were back below normal again. Average daily temperatures ranged from 10 to 12 degrees below normal this week across the state. March 2011 temperatures will go into the record books as coming out just about normal for the month. There was little precipitation most of this week. There was some snow in southwestern Illinois last weekend with over 4 inches in the metro east area. There was some light scattered precipitation across southern Illinois the rest of the week, but it amounted to very little. Chances for rain increased toward the end of this week as high pressure retreated to the east and warmer air began to replace it. It appears April will get off to a stormy start across Illinois and the Midwest. Much of Illinois received a lower than normal precipitation in March, so some rain is helpful. Rain chances will pick up substantially by the beginning of the week, and showers and thunderstorms are likely off and on through Wednesday. They should come to an end as a cold front sweeps through here then. That will bring a brief end to the warmer weather, but by next weekend, wind should again be southerly and starting to warm things up. However, it will also mean an increasing chance for showers as another low-pressure system approaches the Midwest. For the Midwestern Regional Climate Center in Champaign, I'm Steve Hilberg.
Support for Commodity Week comes from AgriGold Hybrids, featuring the AgriGold Giants, a group of 5 new hybrids designed to meet the performance standards of yield, health, and consistency required by Midwestern corn growers. More information is at AgriGoldGiants.com or at 800-262-7333. And by ADM. ADM thanks America's farmers because everything they do starts with you.
This is the April 1st edition of Commodity Week. I'm Todd Gleason in studio with us, Jackie Vakes of Stewart Peterson, Dan Zwicker of ADM Grain Group, and Paul Cooley of ADM Investor Services on the phone line from Memphis, Tennessee, from Bondurant Futures, John Bondurant. John, thanks so much for being with us again. We do appreciate you taking the time. What you make of the Friday closes at the CME Group?
Well, I don't think I ever remember corn up 43 cents and beans down 16 in the same day. Quite a week.
John, you have been a master at the game for a lot of years, although you don't look the part as far as age is concerned. Give us your grade of how the stocks report and the government handled the numbers, both on corn and soybeans, and do you see any problems with those numbers?
I think they've had a huge amount of problem with the corn stocks because they get them mixed up with crop years, and we've been trying to unscramble that game for darn near a year. I've been trading beans for 45 years. I've noticed that the stocks positions, they lose them one quarter and buy them the next. I never found that they were particularly valid on beans. Just my own personal opinion.
Taking a look at the acres, I guess, what caught your attention when you looked at the numbers clear across the board?
I was quite surprised that the southern corn acreage is up 400,000 and that the cotton acreage is only up 1.6 million. I expected the southern corn acreage to be down million to million and a half, and that surprised me. And, consequently, the corn and cotton acreage wasn't up as much. So I guess that was the biggest surprise to me.
Do you think USDA is off on that, or what's your gut feeling on that?
I think the South is not that good in corn, but now here we are in the middle of the planting season. Corn's going crazy, but cotton has too, so maybe they're right. Maybe the whole story was there were a lot of corn and beans booked prior to the big rally in cotton. That's possible, and they couldn't get out of the contracts. But
I was just going to ask you, John, you know, do you think some of the lack of change in cotton was just because equipment no longer was available to them and they would have had to invest too much to be able to do that?
Absolutely. I mean, a new cotton picker costs $550,000 if you can find them, and they're sold out. And do you really want to pay $550,000 to plant cotton and you may not use it next year? Like, I hadn't planted cotton for 4 years. Plant a little bit last year and going to plant a lot this year, but that's a heavy lick to go out and buy a cotton harvester that doesn't do anything but do cotton.
I'll ask you two questions because the last time we talked to you, which was the day of our all-day Ag Outlook meeting, the second Tuesday of the month of March, you said you were going to plant 2,500 acres of cotton instead of 500. Is that still the case?
Yeah, I'm 2,600. The only thing I've switched since then is ditched about 900 acres of beans and planted corn.
And then the follow-up question was, there's been a lot of talk and chatter here about the 1.2 million extra acres of corn that's going into the Dakotas, but did you make note that Iowa, Illinois, and Nebraska, 1, 2, and 3 in corn production, are going to plant an extra million acres of corn?
Well, I didn't think that was terribly surprising. I think if you look at the breakout of where the corn's planted, it's going to be really hard to get a crop much over about 13.6, and I think we're using probably 13.7 this year, at least 200 million over the USDA, maybe 300 million over. So the corn situation looks like it's a real tight thing that's going to remain that way, and gosh knows what happens in the first crop scare.
John, let's brainstorm about China on soybeans. Of course, they canceled some beans today.
Yep.
They claim their crush margins are horrible.
Right.
Do you think this is they've overbought in the world and they really are having crush margins, or is this government manipulation of inventories? And what's your perspective?
I think they've overbought. In fact, I think it so much I wouldn't be surprised if we don't come up 50 to 100 million bushels under the USDA estimate, which is a big statement. But, yes, I buy the story.
Dan. When you look at the fact that, you know, the Fed, the European Bank, and everybody else is talking about raising interest rates, what type of an impact do you think that may have? You know, that all comes into play next week before the USDA report.
Well, if you have a sharp increase in interest rates, which I'm a proponent of, that probably means a stronger dollar. And clearly we've had a huge amount of fund buying based on fear of Ben Bernanke. Nothing more, nothing less. They're scared to death of the dollar.
John, let's go back to commodity flat prices because that's art of the story here. Give us your ideas about corn pricing and how high, and maybe how beans and maybe wheat as far as price levels are concerned, and when do you think we'll hit the highs?
Well, having watched cotton go to $2 a pound, which I never thought I could ever see, the corn situation is much tighter than the cotton situation, much tighter. So I don't know what the peak is on corn, because I really think, you know, I read people think we're talking about 250 million bushel carryover, and I can't exactly argue with them because export sales are good, ethanol margins are, ethanol sitting there at almost 50 cents a gallon under RBOB gasoline, which means the ethanol industry ought to be expanding rather than contracting. So I don't know what the top is on corn. Bean-wise, I don't like what I see on the consumption side. So I think beans are probably near their highs, and wheat doesn't have anything much going for it. As far as, you know, if that acreage is right, we'd be very lucky to cut the carryover any at all next year.
You mentioned you don't like the consumption of what you're seeing in soybeans. What kind of changes do you think USA is going to make on the supply-demand table in April?
I think they've got to cut crush and cut exports. And now what they do with the stocks and all positions report, which was about 50 million less than expected, that's another story. So maybe they raise the carryover 20 million, 30 million. Who knows?
I'd like to ask a question maybe of all four of you. And, John, we can start with you. And I know Paul's asked this once, but what number does ration corn? And maybe you can take it up by user group. So if you have a number you think will ration the export market out, one for the livestock producers, one for the ethanol producers?
Well, we saw a pig report that showed about 3% less farrowing, when that's the first indication I've seen of any cutback in animal numbers. And you see animal weights are about 2% over a year ago, so it doesn't seem to be much rationing going on. But I guess the cattle on feed numbers are big because of all the drought in the Southwest, and I would expect over the next few months you're going to see the cattle on feed numbers sink relative to a year ago. So maybe livestock gets a bit of liquidation. I don't think ethanol does at all, because as long as gasoline's this high there, they ought to be doing great. Exports, yeah. I don't know.
Yeah, you know, it's a tough question, Todd, when you come right down to it, because nobody knows how good a job of risk management a lot of these places have done. We suspect that they've done a much better job than what they've done in the past. But, you know, one of the things I follow is poultry, because poultry has tight margins, and poultry certainly doesn't seem to be showing any signs. What kind of a number? That's what you're looking for, right? You're looking for a number is what you asked for. I'm thinking probably the 850 level, somewhere in that neighborhood on old crop corn.
Dan?
Well, we're going to have to take probably every 50 cents and take a look at it. The thing that I'm going to be watching is basis levels and how cash movement begins to move, and who's willing to come to the table and get a hold of this cash inventory.
I think we will see $8 old crop corn. My carryover number, the government was 575. I wouldn't be a bit surprised if the government doesn't have a 140 number still on beans, and beans at $14 is maybe a sale.
All right, so we've got carryover numbers, ending stock numbers from both John and from Paul. How about from you, Jackie, and you, Dan?
On old crop corn.
Mm-hmm.
I think 575. I agree with Paul from that standpoint. I don't see them taking it a lot lower than that right now. On beans, it 150. I wouldn't be surprised to see them move it up at least 10, but I don't expect it to be much more than that.
It's hard to visualize carryout going any lower, because, I mean, we're going to have to ration demand. So it depends upon how USA wants to approach it. If they want to leave demand the way it is, you're going to have to back off carryover. But they're going to have to cut demand somewhere along the line. I'm going to be a little different. I think the bean number is going to stay the same. Could even go lower.
John, you got a final word for our producers, some wisdom you can pass on to them in this time of change?
Well, I think you're going to have some really strong corn basis levels. It's already gotten really strong here. I mean, Monday before the report, I thought it was really nice to sell corn at 31 over SEP, which is our natural hedge month. And today I sold some at 46 over and 95. It went to $1.20 over. I remember that. So I wouldn't be embarrassed from the producer side to ask some really big basis and see what happens.
One final word from our panelists in studio, 10 seconds each. Paul Cooley?
Hey, have a profitable week and stay with it.
Dan Zwicker?
Just continue to follow the trends and be ready to make some moves if things begin to change.
And Jackie Banks?
Expect just continued volatility.
As always, you can hear Commodity Week, all of our agricultural programming, at willag.org. That's willag.org. Our thanks to our panelists and the guest. This has been the April 1st edition of Commodity Week. It is a production of Illinois Public Media.